Welcome to the Commercial Property Investor Podcast, the show dedicated to the private investor, and I'm your host, Jerry Alexander. We want to show you how to cross the divide from residential investing over to commercial property investing. Through interviews, tips, and lessons learned, we share experiences of investing and give you the inspiration, knowledge, and confidence to enjoy this great cash flowing strategy. So let's get started. Welcome back to CPI Podcast. This week's guest is Julia Hart. She's a property developer in her own right and does a lot of deal sourcing for clients, which you may find particularly interesting. In today's episode, we talk our way through Julia's property history. I always find it fascinating to hear how different people find their way into this industry. We talk about finding deals, working with investors, mixed-use developments, and how she succeeded in a pretty male-dominated market. I don't normally discuss that element, but I thought it was pertinent to go and talk through it. All thoughts are mine and Julia's, of course. I'm sure you'll enjoy this episode. I particularly like the discussion around sourcing deals for high-net-worth investors and opening the door on how that world can work. Let's jump in. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm joined this week by Julia Hart. So it's great to have you on the show, Julia. Welcome.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Yeah, we met each other on Clubhouse, another pairing from Clubhouse, been 2020, whatever it was. It's been really interesting how one's network expanded during that time frame. You spent quite a bit of time on Clubhouse, yeah?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I was one of those early Clubhouses and loved it all through COVID. It was absolutely fantastic. Met and expanded my network on there. Really enjoyed it, learned an awful lot, met some great people. However, life has changed slightly, so I haven't spent so much time on there, but it certainly was fantastic through that period, yes.
Yeah, it was definitely a good investment of time. I met some great connections as well, and including yourself. So
thank you.
So just to give our listeners a bit of context, what sort of things are you working on right now, Julia? Let's just start from there, and then we'll maybe go back a little bit to the beginning.
So I specialize in commercial acquisitions. So I basically find any particular opportunity which has got a lease attached to it. So that could be anything from land that can be developed right through to industrial, through to hotels. So anything where there's income related to an opportunity, I would deal with that. So I've got developers that are looking for opportunities. Generally, I work from about 5 million upwards, but I do get little bits of other things. So people that are looking for opportunities that maybe 50, 60, up to 100 units. Then I go into another genre where maybe slightly bigger. So I've then got developers, investors that are looking for opportunities slightly bigger. Then I go into the high net worth and I find opportunities for family funds and financial institutions. So that's where it gets very investor based. But I also help people sell their portfolios or opportunities in their portfolios as well. So it's a little bit of a two-way streak that goes on all the time.
Brokering going on there. Great. Okay. Mm. And of course, you're investing yourself as well.
I do. Yes. So I've got a commercial piece of land at the moment that we're just putting planning on for three houses. So I'm not as big and as exciting as some of the developers that I work with. However, it's all sort of going on in the background.
Yes.
And I'm quite lucky because I've got my husband stroke business partner. He handles a lot of that work whilst I'm working on the acquisitions.
Brilliant. Okay. So that's where we are right now. How did this all start off?
How did it start?
Was there a life before property?
There was, actually. There was a completely different life before property. However, I have always been really entrepreneurial. So I've always had one foot sort of in that building businesses framework, which I particularly have enjoyed. So I started off very much as a youngster. I worked in the fitness industry and I worked for all sorts of health clubs. But there again, I wanted to work for myself. So I set up a personal training business at that time. And so that was I did that for a good 15 years. Then I became a mum. So life changed slightly. But I could still work that fitness around being a mum, so that was quite good. However, then moved on from there, got a little bit disillusioned with the industry, and went and did some part-time jobs here, there. And I've always just thrown myself into things. I ended up working for a gentleman who ran a limousine company. Gosh, I haven't talked about this for years. And so I ended up actually running his business for him, because he really wasn't very good at marketing and that wasn't really his thing. But that gave me such a lot of confidence to actually believe and know that I could create a business. I seriously could create a business. And that business could be anything of my choosing. So I then went into and set up a children's events company.
Okay.
Which was fascinatingly exciting.
That did involve the limousines as well, though.
Well, yeah, because that's how it sort of, into it. So there was a bit of a crossover there. Yeah. Absolutely loved it. Really, really enjoyed it. It was real hard work. However, it was a great learning curve. That's also where I learned to network, started to understand a lot more about business and how to run a business and so on and so forth. So I really threw myself in the deep end. And then I sold that business, and I decided I wanted to go off and do something else. Went and worked for a charity, which I loved, again, very events-based. So I was really involved in all the huge events there. And coming to the end of working for that company, sadly, my mother wasn't too well, so I started to help look after her. But at that time, I started to look for a new vehicle, something that was going to really excite me and change my dynamics and something that I could really learn, because as an adult, I particularly enjoy learning as an adult. And I looked at all sorts of different things, absolutely hundreds of different things. Nothing sparked my interest until I met a lady called Belinda Gresham. And Belinda Gresham, I saw an article about her and I decided to Google this lady. And turns out that she was a property mentor at the time. Incredibly successful female property developer, and I've always had a little bit of a thing for property, so I thought, right, I'm gonna phone this person up, so because that's me, I'm a bit out there, you know, if I want to go and do something, I'll just go for it. So I contacted them, and as soon as I spoke to her, I knew that's what I was going to do. It was like instantaneous, I'm going to go and work in property. And I spent a year working alongside her. Absolutely lovely lady. We're still very, very good friends and do lots of business together now. So it's been a fantastic journey. And we just clicked and got on. My goodness, the learning curve that year was unbelievable. So I did everything from buy-to-lets, HMOs. We did all the different strategies, but they specifically, or the gentleman that she worked alongside, he was really big on going big. Big or go home was always his mantra. And I quite like that, because that fits my character, you know, because I'm a big picture thinker. So he very much talked in the realms of, well, why do a small opportunity when you can do something much bigger? It's going to take you the same amount of time. It's just bigger numbers, just lots more zeros on the end. So don't be scared of those zeros. So I sort of took all that on board, absolutely. And I absolutely ran with it. I did. I was involved in finding lots of different types of opportunities, but I did then find that there was a lot of people in the residential side. Every time you went and looked for something in the residential side, there was like 10 people queuing up behind you, and they were like nibbing at your heels, you know, wanting to get hold of this opportunity. And that I found quite frustrating, because in the early days it took me some time to evaluate and sort all my numbers out and talk to the right people. And you know, now what I can do in probably 15 minutes would take me 2 weeks.
Yeah, and by then somebody else has bought it.
And by then somebody else has been in and bought it.
Yeah.
So I knew that something needed to change. And just by chance, I was doing a lot of work with two lovely ladies in the Northwest. And we started looking and working on a really, really large old mill, which we put onto an option, and we put the planning on the mill and then flipped it on. And that really sparked my interest, because that then made me realize, where are all these other people looking at this? This is a great opportunity, and they weren't there.
Yeah.
So I was like, maybe commercial is quite a good place to be. And that's really what set me on my road to working in the commercial sector. And I also found it so much more creative. You could do so much more. There were so many other ways that we could create income from the commercial space. And I loved that. I loved that, because there was potentially faster ways to income, because you're potentially buying income. But again, throughout that period, I particularly liked finding the opportunities and doing the deal. That's what really, really sparked my interest. That really got my gut going. I loved almost the detective work of finding things and then finding the right person to speak to, so you could actually get the nuts and bolts of the information and the deal. So I started to realize that actually, rather than doing the development side of things, it was actually the deals that I particularly like to do. Even though we have still carried on and done some small development work, it's not become my prime focus, because though I like it and I enjoy it, I leave all that bit to somebody else.
Somebody else could do the messy bit. The creativity, as you say, it's not just in how do we make multiple income streams, but how do we change this asset into something that's as profitable as possible, as sustainable as possible, but also creativity in terms of finance, in terms of ways.
Let me take a moment to thank Office R&D for supporting the podcast. It's really important to us that we only work with sponsors that we've used ourselves. It's all about being authentic, right? Office R&D is the best flexible workspace platform we've come across, and believe me, we've tried a few systems over the last 20 years. Office R&D helps us manage our invoicing, customer community, reporting, building access, and many more aspects of our day-to-day operations. Why not book yourself a free demo to see how they can help you free up more time to grow your business? Follow the partner link in the show notes.
Is it buying or taking control of the property without necessarily owning it, all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Just go back for a second. So the residential part, how long was it before you actually thought and started working in the commercial sector? Was it a year? Was it 2 years?
About 18 months to 2 years. So we were working very much in the Northwest. And, you know, at that time, I was also putting some serviced accommodation together, and we were setting that up in Liverpool and around Manchester. You know, I had two great colleagues who we were working. And at that time, we were looking at residential opportunities. We went and pitched for a huge old fire station, which was up in and around Liverpool. And that took us months. That took us absolutely months to put this pitch together. And again, that was a huge learning curve in itself, just spending all the time putting the pitch together, weeks and weeks and weeks. Sadly, we didn't win the pitch, but at the time we thought we had a really good chance of winning
this. It taught you a lot, no doubt.
But it taught me ever such a lot about what was required. And ultimately, we probably didn't have a chance in hell of winning that pitch, but it was a fantastic experience at the time, and we did learn an awful lot. But again, that was, of course, being a commercial element. So this commercial kept coming up all the time. And I didn't even realize it then at that point, because we were looking at all a mixture of different things. But certainly bigger opportunities were always something that we were always looking at. And we were then, of course, looking at how we could section those off, how we could potentially create that commercial element so we've got continuous income. And I think, again, because I was looking to secure that income, I was always looking for that security of continuous income and then having the growth thereafter, which I think
get the base in.
Yeah. Yeah. So, which is always what
just
I like.
On reflection, then, if you look back now, and you've maybe got a little bit more perspective, of course, of working with people that are starting in commercial as well. But how important was the residential experience? And I'll just maybe steer the question slightly in that you know, does everybody need to go through the residential experience first before they do commercial? Or is there some other avenues in life they might be able to learn those aspects before they actually get in? Because there's a few people that want to get into commercial, but they're, oh, I need to go and buy some houses first. What's your thoughts on that?
That's a really, really interesting question. I think it's about comfort. People need to do things where they feel comfortable. I often get people that have come to me, and I think you probably do, Jerry, as well, Jerry, where they say, "I've been doing residential, and I want to go into commercial, but I don't know how, and I'm not quite sure how it works in commercial, as though it's a black art commercial. It's not a black art, is it? It's not. It's just different learnings, and
a
so
lot
whether
of
you can pick." A lot of similarities, absolutely. But people get fearful of commercial because they think, oh, you know, they're not sure how to handle leases or how to negotiate leases. But it's like everything. To be totally honest, you've just got to do it. You just got to get in there and do it, and you learn as you go. But if you've got people around you who have worked in that sector, then you've got people to go and talk to. I've still got people that I go and talk to ask advice now. I still don't know everything. So, you know, it's the same when you're coming into something. So to answer your question, do I think you have to do residential? No, I don't think you have to. I think it's a benefit because it gives you perspective. But I don't think you have to have done that necessarily because you'll learn as you go.
Yeah.
Right, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah. And some people love residential. That's where they stay. Occasionally, they might look at commercial and I think I'm going to stay with what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they get the fear, don't they?
Yes.
They get the fear. Oh, I don't know what I'm doing in that. So,
I remember when buying that first commercial, I had a potential business partner lined up because I was too scared to do it on my own. Eventually, I did it on my own, which was great, but.
Yeah.
And you know, if I hadn't now, I probably would have shared everything 50-50, which would not have been great. But yeah, there is that fear factor for sure. But it's interesting that there are loads of similarities between resi and commercial, but equally, commercial is just a business like residential is. And you can learn the things you spoke about negotiation, creativity, and all these sorts of things in another business. You don't have to transfer your skill set through residential. You can come straight into commercial.
No. I agree. I do agree. I don't, as I say, I think it's a benefit, but I don't think it's essential.
Yeah. When you were starting that process, you obviously had a pretty clear, maybe not a clear idea of exactly what you wanted to do, but a direction you wanted to go in. Has the plan narrowed down to what you're wanting to do now? Is it are you quite focused in the strategies you're doing, or are you looking at buildings and then trying to work out the best opportunity? How, what's your kind of approach now?
So the business is sort of split slightly. So I do concentrate on the acquisitions. So I specifically work with the funds and the family funds and looking for investment opportunities. I work with lots of surveyors and, you know, different people that bring me potential opportunities. If I find something that I particularly think would fit us, then I would pass that over to Scott, my husband, and we then discuss that through. Jamie, who's my son, he also works for me as well. So he does all the numbers and all the figures. So though he does a lot of work on all the investment sides and the other opportunities, if something comes through that we think, oh, actually, we quite like the look of that, then we would jump onto that ourselves. So, but my role doing the acquisitions is quite time consuming. You know, it takes a lot of time.
Yep.
So I can't have that focus. So the serviced accommodation, by chance, actually, due to COVID, I ended up, because I had a little team before COVID, and I had to disband the team because I had to let some units go for safety reasons, but I held on to some. So I handed that over to a management company, which I was terrified to do because I'm a bit of a control freak, like to know things are done to a certain standard. However, that was the best thing that I did. So that all gets looked after now. So that's all good. So it allows me to really focus on the acquisition side and finding and spending time building relationships, because I'm not a mass market person. I don't work like an agent, or even I don't even like to call myself a broker, because I like working with people, Jerry. You know, I'm a real people person. So I like finding out specifically, getting to know people, working closely with them, and then I go out. I often go out and find what they want. That's generally, but I get lots coming in, so it does sort of flow.
So the strategies, yeah, are wide and varied. What about geographical location? Is there a
particular geographically area? I do loads in the southeast. However, I do right across the UK, and I do have connections across Europe as well, and a bit into the US. So I've got hotels, land. Out across Europe that I do deal with as well. Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. All right. I want to ask you something a bit more specific then. What project that you've been involved in, you've done, that you've been particularly proud of? What project could you maybe tell us a little bit about?
So there was one project that I was particularly proud of last year, because it was one of those projects that potentially had been looked over by quite a few people, and maybe that people hadn't seen the potential in it. And I think that for me was really exciting, that all of a sudden I could see something here that I felt that nobody else was seeing. I'm sure they probably were, but at the time I felt it was quite exciting. The asking price was pretty good. So I started to really dig into that. It was in a great location. So it was in St Albans. It was on the high street. It was close to the train station. Fantastic pound per square foot. Huge high demand for residential in the area, plus the demand for commercial space. Though one of the units actually had a Moss Bros in, and Moss Bros was going bust. So we had to then do quite a lot of research on how easy it would be to refill that unit. Well, it became quite apparent quite quickly that filling that unit was just not going to be a problem. It was such a great spot. So that, again, alleviated that particular issue that we thought that there might be like an 80,000 hole in that in that lease. But we very quickly realised that could be plugged really quickly. So we knew that there was not going to be any issues. We knew that the opportunity the uppers could be done in stages. So we knew we get PD rights for the first part of the uppers. There was a bank in there as well. They weren't using the upper parts at all. It was almost, it's derelict up there, just not being used. So again, we knew that could be a stage two, where that could be brought back into the portfolio, chopped off, and that could then be redone. Then there was a flat roof out the back. So it just kept giving. It just kept giving the whole time. It really did. The president next door had gone up three stories. So again, another tick. There was some income out the back, because they were being the building next door was paying for right of way out the back. So it was just all these tick boxes were coming in. And it was a fantastic project. We did look at trying to take that on ourselves, and that would have been for us a huge project to do. So we did link up, and because we didn't have the back history really, we didn't have enough back history really to take that forward for ourselves. So I did find a buyer for it in the end. And it was a great sale, and I still hear from them, and they've loved it. It's been such a great opportunity, and they've done exactly what we thought that they would do, and that's, go for the PD rights, put their planning in for this bit, sort out the leases, and it's been one of those dream opportunities, really.
Do you think, Julie, when people were looking at that, you were talking earlier on about seeing it in a different way, do you think the way most were probably looking at that was, this is a problem, Moss Bros have gone bust, this investment is no longer an investment, it's a risk and a liability, and that's
exactly
everyone was looking at it as a problem.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. And because I looked at that as a because of its positioning, that's what drew me in, thinking, no, this is such a prime spot. And I knew that there was high demand. So we got a survey done, actually, and realized that it wasn't going to be any problem at all. In fact, they got somebody else in there for a higher price, much higher price than Moss Bros was paying. So, they've increased the value just by doing that one move.
Yeah,
which is fantastic. And
it's that little nuance between somebody looking at it as an investment. So an investment grade stock is when somebody's buying a property that has an income already, there's a tenant in it on whatever length the lease is in it, and that's your investment grade stock. And then suddenly when that tenant's going bust or something, it's no longer investment grade. It's not an investment project. There's that liability thing. And that's where the opportunity comes for us to be able to do that creativity and work out, right, what could we actually shape this into? But yeah, some people who are not in commercial property and they're doing it more as an investment and in a portfolio of other types of investments just are not looking at that. That sounds like hassle.
Hard work, fear. And also it was, we're on the back end of the retail, everyone going bust, that you can understand why there was probably a little bit more fear about it, but it was just about research, really. It was just doing your due diligence and understanding the area and the market. And we knew it was a hot area.
Yeah.
So we, just kept pushing to see. And that's one of my faves, because it just kept on giving as fast. Nice.
Just tell me the access to the upper floors. Was that already separate, or did that have to be created?
Depending on what part, because there was five different units, so there was access on one of them. So there was a central access up to one side, because it was sort of split into different sides. So yes, there was access from the main street to go above two of the units, which was where they got the PDs from, and then there was access from the back on the other side. So that would have had to have been incorporated from the back.
Yeah. Would you say that was probably one of the best performing ones, best performing assets that you've worked with now that it's all completed?
Yeah. Yes. Well, there's still more to do. From there, I'd be interested actually to go back and talk to them to get some numbers. If they got the full planning to do that, the flat roof as well, it was just absolutely fantastic. There was a huge profit margin to be made. I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm sorry, Jerry.
That's all right.
But there was a huge profit margin in there. But even if they just did the PD section and then above the bank, that was still, the profit margin in that was still really, really viable. So it'd be interesting to watch and learn and hear if they do go the whole way and get those numbers, because that would be great, wouldn't it? I must do that. That's a good question.
It's interesting though, to see, is one of your favorite projects one of the best performing ones, or is it because there was a certain thing that you like doing, or creativity or whatever? It's just interesting to see that motivation. I mean, what do you think motivates you on those sorts of things? Is it really the creative stuff?
Yeah, I love the creative. It enables me to, I definitely like, I get a buzz from that. Oh, look, you could do this, you could do that. Oh, look, how about if you do this? And I wish in some ways I had more creativity, because sometimes when I speak to architects and different people, and I'm in awe of how they come up, and I think, why didn't I come up with that idea? I get cross, because I'd quite like to have that ability to find have those eyes.
Solutions,
But I don't think I do too bad. I think, I'm pretty good. But again, I think that's, again, working with other people, sometimes as a with friends or other colleagues, we get together, we look at potential sites, we say, how do you think, what about doing this? What about doing that? And, other people have different perspectives. Yeah. And I think that's always a great thing to do. So I have a monthly mastermind that I'm a member of, and often people will bring opportunities and we discuss through them and we get different perspectives and different ideas, and that's important.
Yeah, it's and that all adds to your the arrows in your quiver, all the different strategies yes. that you can then think about when you're looking yeah. at these, looking at yeah. the buildings. So that's obviously a big motivator for you. What else do you like doing for fun, Julia? What do you like to go and play?
Oh, what do I like doing for fun? I've always been sporty, obviously, because mm-hmm. I started out. Yeah. So I do lots of yoga. That's a bit of a thing. I'm a bit of a meditator as well. So that's something that I particularly enjoy. But I'm a bit of a dance music buff.
Oh, really?
Keep it quiet though. Don't tell everybody.
Just between you and me. Yeah.
But I do like a bit of a boogie, I have to say. So it's coming into that time of year. It's coming into that time of year. Yeah, absolutely. So I will be watching Pete Tong on Saturday night. Yes, at the O2. So that's sort of my thing. I like to keep my mind healthy. That's very important to me. So I do quite a lot of work on that too.
Very good. I haven't asked this of any ladies that have been on the podcast before, but I thought I'd ask you. Our industry, you could argue, is fairly dominated by males. How do you find that? How do you find working in this industry? Do you find that sometimes that can actually be almost helpful sometimes in that, you know, trying to deal with these let me rephrase that. I find with anybody, once you've worked out what their motivations are and where they're coming from, it becomes much easier to work towards what you're trying to achieve, right? But in this industry, because there's so many males, and for me, some of them are pretty intransigent, you know, they're stuck in their ways. Agents pops into my mind. How have you found that?
That's such a good question, Terry. It really is. There's two sides to it, actually. There are those who are very old school, very set in their ways,
yep.
who absolutely infuriate me because yep. they think that I'm a woman and what would I know anything about property? So that, and I do have to battle against that quite a lot. And I do find that infuriating. But then I've got another side of me because I class myself a bit like the queen of the collections. So, and I love connecting with people. I love talking with people. And like you say, once I find out that motivation, yeah. then I find it very easy. And I think at being a female, I think sometimes can soften a situation potentially. Mm-hmm. And that's a nice place to be in. So I get two sides of it very much. I get that strong old school, which just don't even go there with me because it put me on my soapbox. And then I think I get the other side where it is a benefit. So, and that's maybe because I can just chat about all sorts of different things, you know, connect with people in a different way.
I think that being able to do that comes from confidence, though, doesn't it? Be confidence in yourself to be able to deal with whomever or whatever's in front of you. And by having that confidence, it just makes the whole process easier, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I guess it's partly being able to build up that confidence. But the reason I ask is just I know that a lot of our listeners are ladies. I'm sure it's at least 50-50. And, you know, some struggle with it and then others just get on with it. And
yeah, I think
I can't sit here and say what to do about it, but I do know that once you've worked out, I mean, everybody has an ego, right? So once you've worked out what that ego wants, life can become easier.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm very lucky because I have a huge female property network. So I'm part of the Property Sisters, which lots of people know about. And that has been an incredible support. So prior to that, I felt quite isolated as a female in the industry. But since I met, which was a couple of years ago now, met all the Property Sisters, and I have a female platform to go to sometimes just to say, oh my God, you know, this chap's just driven me mad because he's got such an ego. Thinks he, you know, it's just that bouncing off. But also a place where you can ask questions and not feel uncomfortable, which is again fantastic. So if there are people that females that are out there feeling isolated, then reach out to other females. There is a lot of us out there. Don't feel that you're on your own, because you really aren't. There are networks, there's lots of us out here, and we all love to support each other. And the information and knowledge out there is also fantastic through the female network. So any listeners who want to reach out to me and I can, you know, introduce them to any others, I'd love to do so.
Yeah, that's great. It was a topic I thought I would like to touch on. And it's interesting, when I do masterminds and things, usually it's 50-50, males and females. Mm. But I know that there'll be some that don't come forward because they just feel, as well as all the other pressures of how the hell does this commercial property market work, there's all that stuff as well.
Yeah,
you sometimes see males dismissing a little bit, but I have to say, that isn't just a thing about females. I mean, I get dismissed a lot. I get agents not fully returning my calls and everything else, and that aloofness of, what do you know? So it does affect all of us. But the important thing, as you say, is to be able to reach out and have a network or some contacts there that you can just check in with to just kind of reset and say, maybe even have a laugh about it to a point.
That's right. Absolutely. And ultimately, I think to myself, well, this person's shot themselves in the foot, because I'm not going to do business with this person. You know, there are people that have got red lines through their names. do not speak to this person again, because they have been that dismissive or that rude. And, you know, luckily I can say that there's not that many that I feel like that about. But they do, they do come, I do come across them, and ultimately they've missed out, because I could have done a lot of business. I could have brought a lot of business their way. And if they choose not to, then that's the thing. And I, you know, that's their loss. That's how I look at it.
You can fight or let time prove you right. That's just the way it is. Okay. Yeah. So looking forward, what projects are you currently working on?
So we've got our little project for us personally that we're working on, which is alongside our JV partner, Andrew McDonald. Yep. So that's our, that we're putting planning on for 2 or 3 houses. So that's quite exciting. We haven't quite decided what we're going to do yet, whether we're going to flip on or whether we're going to sell. No decisions have been made yet. I've been dealing with some quite large acquisitions, which is always exciting. A bit of an iconic building in there, which is all very hush hush, and we're not supposed to speak about it. I've got some bits and bobs that have come in, actually. I've got quite a few refurb and holds for SA coming through, and I'm just about to go through all our old stock from this year. When I say old stock, I'm saying stock that didn't stack. Yep. From this year, because with what we hope is going to happen with this sort of rebalance that is apparently coming, I'm hoping that some of those we might be able to put into a different situation.
Yes.
And see whether we can move some of those opportunities that are just still hanging around, because they have been overpriced. So that's quite a big focus at the moment. I'm setting all that up at the moment. Ready to kick off in January.
So your current investors that you work with, clearly, you know, when you're working on a project, they take months and months and months and months. So the ramifications of the most recent shenanigans with mini budgets and everything else may lead to the odd snap decision, but it's probably a little bit of time before that filters through. But what are you noticing any change in thinking, processing, speed of clients that are investing in properties?
So two things that I've noticed: people coming in from the US all of a sudden because of the drop in the pound.
Yep.
So people coming through who haven't seen and spoken to you for some time, and all of a sudden they're saying, I want to buy, this is now time to play, I'm coming out, I'm getting my checkbook out. Which is interesting. And the other side of it is looking at the changes in the EPC positively rather than negatively, seeing it as actually an opportunity to take on a building, to do the changes, uplift it in the commercial sector, and then potentially sell it on for a higher price because, of course, all the EPC has been done.
Yes.
So I have been working with a gentleman who does a lot of EPC work. So I'm dealing with quite a lot of different buildings through him, where we can see that there is real strong opportunity, because I perceive that the industry thinks it's all negative rather than seeing it as a positive.
Yeah, certainly from our small bit of the world, there are more asking about your credentials. So there's more pull from customers than necessarily mm-hmm. the stick from the government. So you'd be able to differentiate yourself and ultimately command a higher price as we all transition through to that stage.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting to see how the larger corporates are already working on their ESG, environmental social governance stuff.
Yeah.
But they're now starting to demand that from others. And I can't remember who it was now the other day. I can't remember, one of the NHS's, whether it's the English or the Scottish, saying, here's the credentials we're going to be asking for in 2027. So it's 5 years away. So it gives people a bit of time. But if you do not meet these credentials, we won't be using you as a supplier. And that will have a knock-on effect for people like us who have space that these guys use, who then need to know, well, where's your energy coming from? How's your waste working? And all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So,
It's going to be a bit of the old stick from the government, but it certainly looks like there's going to be more pull from customers.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think it's an area that we need to focus on a little bit more. And I think what really brought to my attention, I had a building, a huge office space in London, which is 160 million, had a fund interest in purchasing this, but as soon as they knew that the EPC, there was issues with the EPC, they turned away from it. And I was like, well, no, hold on a minute here. Well, why are we turning away from this? Like, why are we not finding out what that's going to cost and then what that means that building's going to be worth once that work's done? But of course, they're not interested in that. They were just not interested in that. But then all of a sudden, I thought, there's an opportunity here. That's what really sparked me to start thinking, we've got to turn this around, because the industry keeps saying it's a negative. That's what I hear all the time.
Yes. Yes.
So,
sure, it's a problem.
So, So, okay. In a problem, that's good. Well, it's just about finding the solution to the problem, isn't it?
Sure.
Which is something that we do a lot of.
So, this leads me on to kind of my last part I wanted to just talk about, Julie. Was just if you were talking to a new private investor, or I say new to commercial, they may be investing in some other stuff at the moment, but they're looking at getting into the commercial market. What would be your kind of suggestions at the moment? I know that's pretty vague. It could be all sorts of different people, but listen, if you want, I can reframe it slightly and say, where do you think the opportunities are going to be in the next 12 to 18 months that private investors should maybe turn their eyes towards?
There's a lot of interest in social housing. There is a lot, I have to say. There is a lot of interest around creating potential housing for those that are entering the country, as well as those that are on lower incomes. So it's finding solutions for that, whether that is a standard solution or people are working on alternative solutions. We know that the government are paying out millions of pounds to hotels, so within that, I think there is an opportunity. I think there's potentially an opportunity for smaller investors, because these people don't all want to be housed in the same place, so they need to be moved and put into different places. So they're right across the country, not just, you know, put into particular areas. So I think, again, that's opportunity there. So if you are able to build around the country, for example, you might be able to potentially get a contract to do that. A lot of the REITs are looking to forward fund. So there's opportunities there into social housing, but I certainly think that is an area that people shouldn't be ignoring at the moment.
Okay. Anything on any of the other sectors? Would that be, you mentioned the office space, albeit the scale you're talking about, is maybe just slightly beyond the odd new start in commercial at 160 million, but
Well, I have, you know, I do read quite a lot about the industry, and London's doing really well on its office space, mm-hmm. actually. It's come back to pre-pandemic levels. People are using office space in a different way, but they're not necessarily reducing down their space. They're just redeveloping that space.
Yes.
And I was at an event last week, and there was a gentleman on the panel. He is somebody like yourself. So he takes space, and he's creating office space. And they were laughing because they were saying everybody's told him not to do it because it's a dead business and a dead industry. And he said, "I'm doing all right, thank you very much. So I'm sticking to my strategy." So good on him. You know, he's bucked the trend of people's opinions and stuck with what he's doing, and he's creating office space and or you know mixed hot desking spaces for people.
Yeah. Responding to customer demand rather than market noise. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And I think in this industry, that's very, very important consistently that you check out what the demand is rather than allow other people to tell you what you should be doing.
Okay. Yep.
I think it's important that everybody realizes we are definitely going into a buyer's market mm-hmm. rather than a seller's. I don't think we're going to lose the industrial side, the logistics and industrial, which has been huge this year, hasn't it?
Yep.
Or the last 18 months. I don't think that's going dying off anytime soon either.
Yeah, that's an incredibly strong market. Okay, fantastic. I think this next 18 months is going to have lots of opportunity for people. And I remember going through the 2007, 8, 9 period. And that's when the real opportunities are. If everything's consistent and just trundling along, it's difficult to spot. Mm-hmm. You're in the queue with 10 mm-hmm. other people. Yeah, definitely going to be an interesting time coming up. Okay, Juliet, let's just let people know where they can get a hold of you. You mentioned Property Sisters, so we'll maybe get a note of you of a URL for that. But is there anywhere else people can find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram. So I'm under Sightline Properties. So you find me on Instagram, Facebook, Sightline Properties, and my website, which is sightlineproperties.com.
Nice, simple. Okay, super. Thanks, Julia. Okay. Really appreciate you joining me on the show. Hopefully there's been some inspiration there for some people as well, some good knowledge and some tips on what might be coming up.
Who knows? Who knows? But we've got to keep talking.
Yes.
That's the important thing. We've got to keep talking.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing, Julia. Appreciate
it. You're welcome. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, let me ask you a question. How would you like to quiz today's guest or many of the other guests we've had on? Hi there. I hope you're enjoying the content delivered on the CPI podcast. Even though it's free to listen to, it actually takes quite a bit of time and financial commitment to deliver each and every episode. Did you know that by leaving a positive written review, you, yes, you, will have a direct impact on the visibility of the podcast? And that's really important, because by reaching a wider audience, it helps our team to continually improve the overall content that we deliver to you week after week. For some of you, leaving a review will be second nature, but for others, it might be a first one. Open your podcast app, pick the CPI podcast, and search for previous reviews. And on iTunes in particular, click to look at all of the reviews, and then you'll see an option to leave a written review. Go on, it'll only take 2 minutes, and it'll really make our day. And we genuinely read every single one of them.